This is the Paranormal Podcast with Jim Harold.
Welcome to the Paranormal Podcast. I'm Jim Harold, and so glad to be with you once again, specifically because I have one of my favorite people in the paranormal arena, one of my all-time favorite guests, a good person and a fantastic author. I'm talking about Rosemary Ellen Guiley. She is one of the leading experts in the paranormal and metaphysical fields. She has worked full-time as a researcher, author, and investigator since 1983. Her research includes all kinds of entity contact experiences, problem hauntings, interdimensional portals, spirit communications, past and parallel lives, dream work, angels, and more. She has written more than 50 books, including encyclopedias, on a wide range of subjects, including groundbreaking research on the Djinn and shadow people. And tonight we're going to talk to her. Her recent book is The Djinn Connection, The Hidden Links Between Djinn, Shadow People, ETs, Nephilim, Archons, Reptilians, and Other Entities. In addition to a busy schedule of research, writing, and media, Rosemary runs her own publishing company and is a consulting editor of Fate Magazine. Her websites are visionaryliving.com and djinnuniverse.com. Rosemary Ellen Guiley, welcome back to the Paranormal Podcast.
Such a treat to be with you tonight, Jim.
Oh, it's always great to talk to you, Rosemary. So, for those not familiar, let's start at a baseline. What or who are the Djinn?
They are very interesting entities who've been around on this planet a very long time. They are a race of supernaturally empowered beings. And according to folklore and mythology, they were here on the planet before us, and they lost their primary place here. But they're still connected to the Earth. They exist in a parallel dimension, and they do have access to our world. They're a lot like human beings, very intelligent, organized into families and social structures, and they have their own, political structure. And their temperaments are like us, you know, the good, the bad, and the ugly. But one of the things that I have discovered over my years of investigating is that the Djinn fool around with us a lot. This is well known in many cultures around the world, but I discovered that they are playing a very significant role in most of our paranormal experiences all over the planet. And I've been researching their role in hauntings, in entity attachment cases, in abduction experiences, and the various sightings of unknown mysterious creatures. And I find the tracks of the Djinn everywhere. For many people, this is a problem because some of them like to pester people, and I think that they are behind a lot of what I call persistent negative hauntings, cases where people are plagued with a variety of unpleasant phenomena that just doesn't seem to go away no matter what you try. So that's kind of the tip of the iceberg right there, and it goes much deeper than that, Jim.
When in history do we find the first recorded mention of the Djinn? Because I know if you go way back, they are in some ancient writings. Tell us about how people of the past considered the Djinn.
What we know the most about them comes from Middle Eastern folklore, and the earliest oral accounts of them came out of Arabian lore, and in fact the word Djinn is an Arabic term for the hidden ones, and they are hidden. They like to interact with us, but in disguised ways. They're masterful shapeshifters. They would like us to think that we're dealing with some other kinds of entities when in fact we're really dealing with them. In the earliest stories, they were said to be formed of the winds. Now, nobody really knows what the true form of the Djinn is. They can take any form and seem to be very physical and solid. They can turn into mist and smoke and literally pass through solid matter in our dimension or just disappear altogether. So they had dominion over the planet in the early lore, and in some accounts they got to be too arrogant, and this displeased God, and so they were banished. the jinn were absorbed into the Quran during the development of Islam. And according to the creation story there, they lost their place on earth because when God decided to create humans, they would not bow in deference to a being that they considered to be inferior to themselves. And so they've had quite a long history of interacting with people, and even though the jinn are varied in temperament as we are, and not all of them have a hostile disposition toward us, we seem to be dealing with the hostile ones most of the time when we have interactions with them. They have been described throughout the literature from centuries ago as deceitful, tricky, untrustworthy, and to be avoided, and very vengeful when wronged, that it's better to avoid interacting with them than to risk being on the unhappy end of dealings with them. And in Islam, the Quran is preached to the jinn as well as to humans, that they have free will and they can choose their own religious faiths or no faith at all, and that they also have the opportunity for redemption as we do.
Now, jinn and genie, is there any connection? Does the kind of archetype of the genie, does that somehow spur from the idea of the jinn?
It does indeed, and in fact, genie is a corruption of the word jinn. There are stories about the jinn in the old, what we know as the Arabian Nights folk tales, and when these were collected and finally written down and then translated into French and English, the term jinn in some of the French writings was corrupted as genie. And these stories are often portray the jinn as tricky beings who can be trapped in bottles and come out in mist and smoke and grant people wishes. This is one of the primary ways that we have been acquainted with the jinn. Only we've never known them as the jinn in our culture. They've always been genies, the genies in the bottle. And from the standpoint of our entertainment, our fiction and our film and television, these are, they seem to us like fanciful beings that really don't exist except in folk tales and fairy tales. They're often portrayed in silly kinds of ways, when in fact these are originally very real entities and very powerful entities, and because of their supernatural abilities, they can often gain the upper hand on us.
Is there any truth or anything that you could find out to back up the idea of a genie and a magical lamp? Or a jinn?
Well, the old legend, of course, one of the most famous ones goes back to Aladdin and the lamp. And Aladdin liberates a genie, and it carries out his wishes. There's folklore about the genie's granting three wishes. In the story of Aladdin, he gets unlimited wishes for the rest of his life, and everything works out pretty well for him. He gets money, he gets a position, he marries, royalty, and a lot of it's with the help of his genie in the bottle. But most of the stories we know about the genies are that they put a twist on things, and no matter what you wish for, they will always find a way to turn the tables on you. They often, I believe, are mistaken for demons, and they have the capability of possessing. They can torment people and act in what we would call demonic ways, very malevolent ways. It seems that some of them don't like people. Some of them become fascinated with people and want to attach themselves and have, some sort of relationship with people. There are even traditions of being able to marry jinn and have jinn companions in addition to your mortal ones.
What are some warning signs that you have encountered or are encountering a jinn?
I've been studying that a lot in my paranormal investigations because I focused on a lot of cases that are these persistent negative hauntings where solutions don't seem to stick. They don't stick at all, or they don't stick for very long, and the problems start up again. I think these are jinn cases, and they've been misidentified by a lot of experiencers, victims, and investigators. The cases almost always involve a variety of phenomena that's constantly changing, and it's as though something's trying to distract your attention. It may seem that there are ghosts, that there are poltergeists, that there's some sort of sexual nighttime attacks, there might be nightmares, there's mental oppression, and a lot of things going on in an environment that seem to be attributed to a variety of presences, when in fact, all those things can be caused by one, by a single entity. And that often in these cases is jinn. In demonic cases, there's a progression, a very marked deterioration of the victim. And it usually starts with some problems in the environment that then become very personally focused with attacks, and a person suffers mental, emotional, spiritual deterioration, and in the worst cases, a full-blown possession. Not all the jinn are intent on possessing people. Many of them are, if they're going to bother people and cause problems, they can cause a host of problems without ever possessing some, and in many cases it doesn't even seem that that's the end purpose. The end purpose might be to try and drive someone from property. Some of them seem to have attachments to land, and if people come on to land that they consider theirs, and the jinn find them to be annoying, they can create a whole host of disturbances that, in some cases, does wind up driving people away.
Now, when you talk about encounters of different types of beings, one thing that comes to mind, and I don't know if you would consider this possibly the work of shape-shifting jinn, but what about this idea of alien abduction? Could all of these reports that we've been hearing about people who are encountering kind of these bug-eyed gray aliens, could they possibly be somehow connected to the jinn instead of true aliens?
They certainly could. And I've talked to researchers and experts around the planet who've been studying the jinn for quite a long time, and who've said, you know, look, Rosemary, it's all jinn. You know, they've just figured out that, you know, they were fairies at one time, and you know, now they're ETs because they've figured out that we're more entranced with technology, and we can be made to fear the beings from outer space, and so that's how shifted themselves. The link between jinn and ETs for me in my research was a bit unexpected. I followed a trail that really started with shadow people. About 10 years ago, I started researching shadow people, these dark, human-like entities who invade people's bedrooms at night and are quite terrifying. They also lurk in haunted places. They have been reported outdoors. Stories about them go way back in time. They look like tall men wearing coats and hats, sometimes capes or cowls, hoods, and they have no features, and they don't communicate. Sometimes they just stand and watch. Sometimes they attack people. The attacks can vary. I was curious to find out what these beings were, because they didn't seem, their behavior and descriptions were very consistent, but they didn't seem to fit what was commonly described of ghosts, for example, or poltergeists or demonic entities. And after studying hundreds and hundreds of cases and comparing them, you know, doing cross comparisons with reports of other kinds of entities, I found a very good fit with Jin. And I still think, after several years of continuing that line of research, that shadow people are a favorite form taken by Jin. What I discovered then, because I've followed ufology for a good many years, and I've been interested in the ET abduction scenario, I discovered descriptions in abduction accounts that match shadow people, and that many abductees had shadow people experiences, sometimes from very early age, and that there was a pattern of shadow people coming in advance of an abduction. Mm. This is a phenomenon that really had been largely ignored in the ufology community as, I guess, a phenomenon that wasn't important to the central focus of the abduction. I consider it to be very important. So if shadow people were jinn, and shadow people show up in abduction experiences, what are the jinn doing in abductions? That set me on a whole new line of research, and I started going back through the abduction literature, even to the Tujunga Canyon case that occurred in the 1950s, and found descriptions of shadow people and other entities that also could be interpreted as jinn throughout the abduction literature. So I'm willing to say, at the very least, that the jinn have been playing a role in abductions, and whether or not they are accounting for all ETs through various shape-shifting, or they are working in collusion with ETs, other races, or even working against them in some way, remains largely unknown, because nobody's been asking those questions yet in abduction research. So it may be quite some time before we figure out what this whole new dimension to the abduction experience is, but the jinn are very much involved in this. And since the jinn connection came out, I have heard from people who have had both shadow people and abduction experiences, and even some individuals who do believe that they are one and the same. It's all a very disturbing tip of the iceberg, Jim, because I think there are some things going on in our paranormal experiences and entity contact experiences that are not what we have thought them to be. And we do need to shine a light on all of this and become better informed, because a lot of it is not in our interests.
No, it certainly sounds like something that's quite terrifying and kind of takes the fun aspect of the paranormal out of it. It's truly, truly disturbing, but it's a fascinating topic. Our guest is Rosemary Ellen Guiley. The book is The Jinn Connection, The Hidden Links Between Jinn, Shadow People, ETs, Nephilim, Archons, Reptilians, and Other Entities. And we're going to ask Rosemary, she can maybe get a sip of water while we share this message with you. I wanted to say, and we'll get right back to Rosemary in a moment. I wanted to say, I wanted you to check out my book if you are interested in things like ghost stories and stories of the supernatural. Now, we don't have any stories in there that I specifically know can be attributed to the jinn, but we do have 70 spooky stories that will keep you up at night. The name of the book is True Ghost Stories, Jim Harold's Campfire 2, and you can find it at jimharoldbooks.com. That's jimheraldbooks.com. Someone said, Jim, sometimes I can't understand your name. How do you spell that? So that's H-A-R-O-L-D. So it's jimheraldbooks.com. And you can go over there and pick up True Ghost Stories, Jim Harold's Campfire 2, which is based on my podcast of the same name, The Campfire. And there are 70 spooky stories told by our listeners from all around the world. It's about 254 pages. And best of all, this holiday season, it's a great gift. You can get the paperback for under $9. And that's through Amazon. If you go to that web address, you can type it in at Amazon too, but I just give you that URL for ease of usage. And you go over to jimheraldbooks.com. It'll take you to the page where the book is. You can get the paperback, as I said, for under $9. If you decide you want to pick up on both, you buy the paperback, then you can get the electronic version for only 99 cents. And if you just say, hey, I'm not a dead tree kind of guy or girl, then you can just pick up the ebook for $2.99. So if you're into True Ghost Stories, we think it is a great buy. It's got 109 reviews. I think we're rated at 5 stars. We were the number one supernatural bestseller on Kindle during the Halloween season. So I figure if you're dialed into this program, it's the kind of thing you might like. JimHaroldBooks.com. And thank you for listening to that message. And now we return to our guest, Rosemary Ellen Guiley. She, again, is an author of more than 50 books. And the book we're talking about tonight and the phenomena that we're talking about tonight are the djinn. And the title is The Djinn Connection, The Hidden Links Between Djinn, Shadow People, ETs, Nephilims, Archons, Reptilians, and Other Entities. Rosemary, do we have, now that you've scared us, do we have documented cases of the djinn doing bodily harm to people?
Well, I've certainly collected some cases in the course of my research, and I am working on another book on the djinn, which will deal with a lot of these persistent negative hauntings. And even going back to the shadow people cases, where people reported being attacked by these entities, they experienced sensations of being suffocated, choked. I've had reports of poisonous breath where they felt that the entity was trying to poison them through some sort of noxious breath or suck their breath out of them in a vampiric sort of way. People have been bruised. Myself, I've experienced some very weird marks on my back. I was cut once during an investigation. Nothing major, just a shallow cut. And these are reported by other, these sorts of phenomena are reported by investigators too, that they get weird scratches and shallow cuts like box cutter or razor cuts on them during investigations or after investigations. The djinn have been behind a host of nasty things that can happen to people who displease them. And in Middle Eastern lore, there are cases of deaths that are attributed to djinn, that people crossed the djinn or did harm to the djinn, and so the djinn's own kind took revenge on them. And I have discussed some of those in my first book on the djinn, The Vengeful Djinn. And in some of my own research, people who have attempted to exorcise these entities off properties have had accidents, or accidents have happened to people around them. It's very well known that if a djinn don't get you, they will get people around you, sort of like a mob mentality. That's one way to intimidate people. And I've had cases where people have had very serious medical emergencies as well as accidents. And then there are another kind of phenomena that happen to people that is much harder to attribute to the paranormal, but still occurs in these cases. It's where people's lives fall apart. And we see this where people move into places that have these negative haunting scenarios going on, or under the proverbial, you know, cursed land, so to speak.
Right.
And they begin to experience depression, or they can't hang on to their job. They might have addiction problems, onset of that. Their marriages fall apart. Their money, they lose their money. And while these things happen to people just in the course of daily life, I hasten to say I don't think we can blame every bad thing on entity influence. And, you know, jokes have made about, you know, the devil made me do it, and, you know, nothing's my fault. We do have to take responsibility for our actions. But nonetheless, there are these disturbing patterns that we find in cases associated also with this heavy-duty paranormal stuff, where these side effects happen. And they don't affect everybody across the board in the same way, but it is a noticeable pattern. And we'll never get a clear line in terms of can you attribute certain things directly to entity interference. It's a difficult call to make. But the whole constellation of these things taken together adds up to a disturbing pattern as well. But it seems that there can be some direct effects. For example, one of the cases that I am featuring in the new book, where I investigated for 3 years, and I do like to follow these cases for a long period of time for, you know, maximum observance and to establish patterns. And every time the property was attempted to be exercised, something bad happened to somebody, a family member, even the exorcists themselves, to prevent the exorcism from taking place. And I even had my investigations interfered with. That I was able to investigate a little, but sometimes I would make arrangements to, for example, do something on an all-night basis, and the day of or the day before, there would be some disaster in the house that would prevent me from coming over, or the people would suddenly get sick. And it's hard to ignore these things when they happen over and over again.
Absolutely. Now, well, then let me ask you, I think this begs the question. You investigate this, you're writing another book on it, you're very into it, very interesting information that you're imparting, kind of pulling back the veil, as it were. Do you worry about delving into this? Do you ever think, Rosemary, maybe I ought to just go on and do another book on ghosts?
well, it is a concern, and I'm very pragmatic. I have a great deal of respect for these entities. I don't underestimate them at all. And I haven't yet been in a situation where I felt I just had to drop everything. On the other hand, you know, I don't attempt exorcisms myself. I think that's a very dangerous thing to do. I admire the people who can take that on. I do consult in cases, and I make a lot of recommendations for different kinds of solutions and try and bring the right people in who can do those things. But that's one thing that I don't do to which I think does heighten the risk a lot. At the same time, I'm sure that they're very aware of what I'm doing, and I've been told by a number of people that when people get to be too much of a problem for them, then they up the ante, and it just remains to be seen how far and how deep I can go into this research. My motivations are that this is something that people need to know, especially people who have been suffering negative effects. Paranormal investigators need to at least be aware of the possibility that there's, well, for them, a new player in the field, even though the jinn have been around a very long time. I think that we need to experiment and focus on solutions to try and arrive at better remedies for people. And at the same time, with all due respect to the jinn, we need to take into consideration what their position is. And if they feel that human beings have unfairly muscled in on something that they consider to be their territory, for example, or that we have done something that harms their society, even without realizing it, well, we need to see things from the opposite side of the fence. And I think that we are moving into what I call the interdimensional Earth. And all of this paranormal investigation and focus on the paranormal and the media is even increasing this sort of new reality, because it's not only is it making us more aware of the paranormal, but I think it enables us to engage with these beings who live on the planet with us, and we just don't see them most of the time because they're in these other dimensions. If we have more and more openings between dimensions and more interaction, we're going to find ourselves with a different set of neighbors than just the guys down the street. You know, we're going to have, we already have them, we just don't interact with them very much, but those interactions could be increasing. And we might have to take into account that there are other very intelligent beings who have their own self-directed interests on this planet, and our interests and their interests may not be, might not be in the same direction.
I know this will be a hard question to quantify and to answer, but do you think the average person interacts with a jinn daily, weekly, monthly, yearly, once in a lifetime? I mean, how common is this, do you think?
Probably more common than we would like to think. In other cultures, especially the Middle East, and even though what we know about the jinn, I would like to say this, comes out of the Middle East, and most of the information and knowledge about the jinn is from other cultures. That doesn't limit them geographically. They're everywhere on the planet. And in fact, the less people know about them, the easier it is for them to interact with us and to operate in our dimension without us being fully aware. So I think, paranormal people certainly are going to encounter them a lot. And anyone who is interested in pursuing studies of the unknown, I think the average person does have some sort of interactions with them, and they may not be troubling interactions. They may only be temporary, too. For example, the shadow person experience is, I think, one of our most common paranormal encounters, may even be more common than ghosts. And here again, it's reporting when a lot of information about shadow people started coming out years ago. People became aware of the fact that this is a phenomenon that occurs to a lot of people, not just something strange that happened to them. So it was a matter of educating people about the paranormal things going on in their lives. People may encounter the jinn in remote areas, when they see encounters with mysterious creatures, sometimes I think the gin act on us in mental ways. The ones who want to manipulate us can find people who are inclined to do harmful things, like they want to seize power or amass huge amounts of money or pursue their own, you know, selfish ends. And the jinn are capable of influencing those tendencies and helping them along, and working with people through indirect and direct deals. And in other cultures, it's not uncommon for people to try to make deals with jinn to further their own gains. It's a very dangerous thing to do because you may not get rid of them even once you've accomplished what you want.
It's kind of like the
We have various ways of interacting with them.
That reminds me of the kind of the story of selling your soul to the devil. And there's always, as you said about the genies before, there's always a catch. There's always some fine print. There's always a twist. So I find that fascinating that kind of interaction may very well be happening this very day. Now, let me ask you this. Now, you had hinted at this and you actually mentioned it. What about romantic entanglements with the jinn? I mean, next time that our single listeners are at the, at their latest, watering establishment, that cute girl or guy in the corner, maybe they better watch out. It might be a jinn.
Well, the jinn have had a long history of having infatuations and amorous interests in human beings. And we find this in fairy lore, too. I did come to the conclusion that fairies are jinn as well. They're practically identical in their creation stories, their attributes, their powers, their interactions with people and behaviors and temperament. I'm not talking about the little nature spirits and elementals, but the kinds of fairies that even our Celtic ancestors were leery of and even afraid of. But there are jinn who become very interested in human beings and in certain parts of the world. It's said that people are born with jinn companions, like many of us believe that we're born with guardian angels. And that in some cases, these jinn companions can become a very active part of someone's life. They can be very jealous of human relationships and work to interfere in them. There are traditions for marrying your jinn companion and having a relationship. How this actually takes place seems to vary quite a bit, whether or not you would actually have an intimate involvement with them in some sort of astral way or lucid dream, or in actual contact that feels very physical. In The Jinn Companion, I feature the story of a young man from the Midwest who had a problematic relationship with this entity who he feels really was instrumental in breaking up his marriage. And he had it's like he couldn't prevent any of the encounters, that when this entity wanted to come and have a visit with him, it did so and would take the form of a very seductive woman. And he eventually was able to push it away, he said, when he got involved in a new relationship. And he started employing various ways to try and keep this entity out. And I found that to be the case with other people who are plagued by frequent visits, that there are all kinds of remedies that work, but not all of them work in all cases all the time. And what seems to be a bottom line for many of these people is that they have to figure out how to push out their own boundaries in a way that the invasive entities can't penetrate, that they're really repelled by the person's own energy field. And I think a lot of the abductees have to learn that as well.
You talked about this young man in the Midwest who was visited by this amorous djinn in the form of a beautiful woman. Now, let me ask you this. Do the djinn actually have a sex, or is it just kind of part of the costuming they put in on to interact with humans?
The experiencers say that they have actual sex, and it can range from just sort of affectionate touching and cuddling to complete intercourse. There are old folk traditions of hybrids, of djinn-human hybrids, and there are even some stories about those in the tales of King Solomon. When he became fascinated with the Queen of Sheba, she was allegedly half djinn. And his advisors were very frightened of that because being half djinn, she might be able to have control over the king and manipulate him if he took her as a mistress. I have talked to a variety of experts on this, and nobody really knows if hybrids are possible or if they exist. I've been told by some saying, well, it's in theory, yes, but even though the djinn can have intercourse with us, there really aren't any offspring. And others who say that there are offspring, and it's like the ET hybrid said to be on the planet, that there are djinn-human hybrids who live among us and keep themselves disguised. The idea of the hybrids has some interesting plausibilities. If some of the djinn want to come and retake our side of the earth, you know, our reality. And there are investigators and researchers who feel that that's the case, that these hostile interactions on the part of the djinn are part of a plan to wear people down and find more ways into our reality so that they can reassert the dominion here that they once had and then lost. And that hybrids might be a way to do that, that you would have a physical vehicle that could exist for long periods of time, perhaps indefinitely in this reality, and yet you would have genetic characteristics of the djinn and perhaps conditioning and allegiance to the djinn that would enhance their advantage. So these are some interesting theories that sound far-fetched, but they're actually not. They are not all that far-fetched. And one of the things that I've been doing in my research is looking for evidence and data and experiences that build patterns. And I have to go wherever those patterns take me. I've had to change my views on the paranormal, and many times as a consequence of research. And if that's the case, that those arguments can be made and the evidence supports them, well, then we have a whole new set of issues to deal with.
Well, it is a fascinating topic. Our guest is Rosemary Ellen Guiley, and we're going to get back right with her after this brief message. But I did want to make mention of one thing. I did want to let everybody know that if you're in the continental U.S. and you're hearing the sound of my voice before December 6th, you can go over to jimherald.com and sign up for my holiday big book giveaway. Here at the Spooky Studio, we get a lot of fine paranormal books. Of course, I keep all of Rosemary's. I don't give those away. But sometimes we have a surplus. And I figure, well, what can we do with these? And I thought, why not share the wealth with our great audience? And the way that you get in on the action, go over to jimherold.com. Now, you may or may not, you may hear this on a live stream. And if you do, if you go over there now, just look on one of the other posts. And in on one of those recent posts, there'll be a link to sign up for the Big Book giveaway. And with that, you go to that site, click on that link, and then you sign up for my weekly newsletter. And that's basically a weekly newsletter where I share stories and also tell you what's up with the show's upcoming topics and so forth, and kind of give you updates on the spooky studio here. If you sign up to that, you're automatically entered into the contest. Now, if you're already signed up for my free newsletter, and this is absolutely free, there's no purchase required for this, you don't have to worry. You're already entered. If you're signed up to the list and you're in the continental U.S., and that's just the reality of shipping. We can't afford to ship a bunch of paranormal books halfway across the world, as much as we'd love to do that because we have some fantastic international listeners. And what I'm giving away three prizes, one 10-pack of books, and two 5-pack of books. And all you got to do is go over to jimherold.com, check out one of those recent posts, and in the show notes, there'll be a link there to click. Click, type in your password, submit it. You'll start getting the newsletter, and you'll also be entered for that random drawing on December 6th. There'll be three winners. One will win 10 books, and the other two will win 5 each. And I hope you check it out. It's jimherold.com, JimHarold.com. And our guest is Rosemary Ellen Guiley, and we're headed down the home stretch. The subject are the djinn. Now, Rosemary, some fascinating things that we've covered tonight. Do you think, and I think you've hinted at this, do you believe that this whole field of study might lead to some kind of grand unified theory of the paranormal where the djinn are sitting at the head of the table, as it were?
A lot of us in the field are looking for the Oz behind the curtain, and I would say the djinn are the best candidates for that. If there's anything beyond them, we don't have any evidence yet. You know, John Keel years ago wrote about these sorts of things from the standpoint of the cosmic trickster. He didn't talk about the djinn, but he did talk about a trickster entity who was behind all of this paranormal stuff, and which is why it's so crazy, oftentimes without logic. Often goes around in circles without resolution, a lot of blind alleys, and that we were being manipulated by this cosmic trickster. Well, the djinn certainly fit that description, and if all of our paranormal phenomena can be attributed to them, that certainly sets a whole new compass point for us. If it's just us, the djinn, and angels, then what's beyond that? And why would the djinn account for everything that's not us or angels? But there are people who firmly believe that. Those ideas have been present in djinn lore and mythology for a very long period of time. Not without basis, and if not beyond question, that could very well be the case. The deeper I go into this subject of the djinn, the more things point back to them being the source of all of these things we experience.
Now, you mentioned the angels. You would like to think that if there's some kind of entities out there that may not be looking out for our best interest, maybe trying to kind of throw a wrench into the works of our lives, that there's also some opposing force that's looking out for us. Do you believe that to be the case? And do you believe that there are some beings out there kind of fighting against the more, what's the word I'm looking for, more nefarious djinn that would be against us?
There could very well be other entities from other worlds who would be opponents of the djinn. For example, I don't think that all of our ET experiences are interdimensional. I think most of them are, but it's certainly plausible that we have been and are being visited by beings from other worlds within our universe, for example. And some of them may not want to be cooperating with the djinn. They might be at cross purposes. Whether or not that would have our best interests in mind, well, that's another matter. If they were looking at us in terms of exploitation for their own purposes, the angels the djinn do not like angels and even have a fear of them. So calling on angelic help certainly might be helpful in cases involving the djinn. The angels are, I view them as beings who are concerned with the maintenance of cosmic order. And sometimes that's going to be beneficial for us, and sometimes it's not. That's the reality of it. And they will come to our aid in many cases, but I think some of them have concerns really beyond that. And that there's an order to the cosmos that extends far beyond us and our desires, and how well we fit into that balance.
It's a frightening thought that there are these entities out there that want to do us harm potentially. Is there any limit to their power? Is there anything that they can't do?
Well, you know, I think if they wanted to annihilate us and they had the ability to do so, I think they would have done it by now. So one of the things that is unanswered is why? Why not? Are they being blocked in some way, or are there spiritual laws against it? It is said that the djinn have their own morals and ethics. And whether or not they also have the capability of penetrating our dimension to the point where they could just get rid of us, they may not be able to do so. I think they've made attempts to do so. And in the djinn connection, I talk about the evidence that they might have helped along the Black Plague, for example.
Oh my!
And trying to get rid of people, and they may be behind other plagues and epidemics and wars and chaos. I think some of them do participate in that. But the fact of the matter is that they haven't been able to do away with us if that's been their purpose. There have been very various explanations even given by the djinn for that. And who knows if they're telling the truth. They have a reputation for being misleading and deceitful. But some of them have said that, it goes against some sort of, cosmic edict about our place on the planet, or we have too much iron in our blood and iron affects them. I don't put much stock in that argument because if that's what all it takes is iron in our blood to keep them away, then they wouldn't be able to pester us at all.
We just eat a lot of steaks.
We eat a lot of steaks, right? So are there some sort of spiritual laws or constraints against them? Maybe it has to do with their actual ability to maintain a presence in this dimension. If they could be here all the time, would they? They don't seem to be around all the time, just when and where they are able to assert themselves and do so in rather limited ways. So one of my purposes is to call attention to these sorts of things going on and some of the reasons for them that we're experiencing in the paranormal. And we definitely need more attention and research in this area. And paranormal investigators are some of the persons on the front lines who can start doing those sorts of lines of research, because they're out encountering these phenomena and these beings all the time.
Any final thoughts as we come to the top of the hour here in just a few moments? Any final thoughts that you'd like to share with our audience on the Djinn, and then we'll give you an opportunity to tell people where they can find your books and your websites and so forth?
I think it's important for us to become familiar with them and their own creation story, their characteristics, their motives for interacting with us. We seem to have the attitude that we have eminent domain, and that if there are troubling presences in our homes or buildings or around us, that we can just banish them at will. And it's a rude shock when we discover that they don't always go away. So we need to reorient ourselves on what it is we're dealing with, and who we're dealing with, and why, and realize that sometimes we may be the problem, not them, and have to rethink solutions.
Interesting perspective. And I guess when we're all dressed up in our ghost hunting shirts with our EVP meters and so forth, we ought to keep in mind that it's not like going bowling, that there's some real repercussions to all of this.
There really are, and the paranormal investigator really assumes a lot of responsibility in approaching these situations.
Rosemary,
it's not fun and games.
Rosemary, we are drawing short on time. Could you give us your website and where people can find all of your books?
VisionaryLiving.com is my main site, and I do have books in the bookshop there. They're also available on Amazon, Nook, Kobo, various ebook platforms. And DjinnUniverse.com is my website on the Djinn. A lot of contributions from people all over the world on their own experiences, and that's quite an eye-opener. It's a good place to start if you want to learn more.
Sounds great to me. Thank you so much, Rosemary Ellen Guiley, for being with us tonight. I've enjoyed it, and I hope that you're protected from the Djinns. I hope all of our listeners out there are protected from the Djinn, and I hope everybody will come back and listen to the Paranormal Podcast next week and check all of them out at jimherold.com. Good night, everybody.